As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Millennial Money. Today, we're going to talk about the Fed and firing Jerome Powell, which basically means we get to talk about whatever we want, including real estate stocks, inflation, bad stocks to avoid like Tattooed Chef, good stocks to buy like anything else, and you know, whatever we want to talk about. So who wants to start?
I want to start, Kevin. Have you seen the chef, you little shorty? It's going good. It's going really good. It's cooking, baby. It's cooking.
I think you mean yes, going
I,
well.
I saw you paid some people in Wall Street Bets to start pumping, huh?
Hey, we're live. You're not supposed to say that. What the heck, man? Don't divulge my people. Yeah, man. They're heating back up. But anyways, you know, we got a lot of cauliflower over here. Maybe someday you'll be able to afford cauliflower, Kevin. But we'll see.
You know, it must be nice to have a stock that just goes from 16 to 23, 16 to 23. You know, because then you can make videos. Oh, no, it went down. Yay, it went up.
Kevin, you've gone too far.
why doesn't somebody else take it from here? Andre, do you have something constructive to say?
Listen, one day it's going to hit 24, okay?
What the hell?
Hey, I actually want to hear this Wall Street Bets thing. What happened, Jeremy? They started talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, they have. And I have a friend who's convinced that some of the folks in Wall Street Bets are actually hedge funds or more professional investors. Because I will say sometimes these theses they have around, like, you know, the implied volatility on this and da-da-da. I mean, they start talking so complicated. It's like, you know, it's hard to even understand some of the things they're kind of going through. But essentially, Tattoo Chef is getting more popular on there. There was a very popular post that has, like, I think 600 upvotes or something like that now around the stock basically skyrocketing over the next few weeks. So, you know, I'm not going to explain it in detail because I'm probably not the best to do that because I'm not a trader. And it's more around trading stuff rather than investing. So this isn't like talking about the revenue growth. There we go.
Check it out.
Let's see it.
Up here is a tightly wound time bomb, Tattooed Chef, a wildly asymmetric bet with an options IV that is drastically underpricing the risk of trapped shorts. Okay, so quick summary below on TTCF. Outstanding revenue growth up 52% year over year. Yeah, I mean, when you go from $1 to $1.50, you know, okay. Short borrow rate spiked to 300% from 200%, short interest at 61%. I don't know about that, but okay. Actionable float at 37% of entire float. Fail to deliver. Panic resets the clock. Are rampant. Float constrained to 24 mil. So basically they're saying there's not a lot of the stock. It's got a higher short interest. It is a SPAC, which SPACs have been shorted like crazy over the past, you know, 6 months, which this is true. The fundamentals they gave was basically a 50% year-over-year revenue growth. So really, like Jeremy said, this is not a fundamentals. This is just trading.
Oh, no, go down a bit. It gets good, man.
What is
one,
this?
Part three, part four.
Hold on.
That's where it gets crazy.
What's this?
Short bear. Let's Reset the Clock, Crooked Dealer, That'll Work Great Till the Exit Strategy, Closer Look, You Do Have an Exit Strategy. Okay.
Oh my God.
Tattooed Chef Creates Sustainable Vegetarian Food. Okay, whatever. We know this. Yeah. CEO part, is a cool dude too.
Part two is where it gets good or crazy.
Uh-huh.
Jeremy, you really gotta cover this.
Jeez, man.
Who writes this?
I know.
So here's okay. Massive shorts constrained. So float 40 mil, institutions 15.6, short interest 15 mil per Ortex, trading float. Okay, now kind of short shares. Interesting. TTC have peculiar because every case of a spiked 100%. Yeah, they've got a lot of they've done some real interesting research here. I'm gonna pull up the Bloomberg terminal and fact check in just a minute here. But yeah, they're using Ortex right here and trying to correlate these patterns between obviously short interest going up and institutional ownership of these shares going up, making for less short shares available. And in other words, I think they're trying to set up a squeeze here. I do wonder how much you have institutional investors getting in on this stuff. I think you're right, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, it looks, I mean, that's intense, man. That's all I'm going to say about that. And I'm no trader, so a lot of the stuff just goes over my head. But it is,
yeah. Jeremy, what if you get short squeezed to like $100? What are you going to do? Are you going to sell or are you just going to ride the wave?
I mean, 100, yeah, I would probably have to sell. If it was to double, I likely wouldn't. Like, let's say the stock goes to 40 tomorrow, 44 or whatever. No, but 100, oh, shoot, man. You know, that's a little different.
Yeah, but this was posted yesterday. When did this get popular?
I think in the last 24 hours. So a friend sent me it late last night. And I think at that time it hadn't even been up for a day, roughly. So
that's interesting.
This is really detailed. I am shocked. Who writes that?
Not me.
Watch it's like Elon.
Yeah, but here's the thing though. Couldn't hypothetically someone with Tattooed Chef do something like that to try to boost the stock's price? And once it gains meme status, just think of what happened with AMC and GameStop. I mean, they were able to raise so much money by the stock going up. It got a lot of popularity. They raised a whole bunch of cash. Who's to say that can't just catch on with other stocks and other companies who are just like, hey, let's become a meme.
Right.
It's tough to make that happen, though. You know what I mean? Like, those are very, very rare situations there. And you needed the whole communities to get behind it. So
not necessarily. You could just use bots. Upvote it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm guessing Reddit's probably pretty good about detecting that, I would assume.
I don't think so. I don't know. I've seen it a lot. Yeah, where it's like, that's got to be an advertisement for like a new upcoming TV show. There's no way it's...
Believe it or not, that used to happen a lot in the cryptocurrency subreddit with Bitcoin. There was a huge amount of bots upvoting and downvoting certain threads just for that reason.
Ooh, in the crypto, there's a crypto one, Andre?
Yeah, cryptocurrency subreddit. Mm-hmm.
Okay. By the way, are those super popular in terms of like trying to basically just pump new coins and stuff?
Yeah, hugely popular. I don't know how many cryptocurrency has, but I think it has several million followers in that subreddit.
Jeez. Yeah. Wow. That's approaching the then that's the biggest one on Reddit.
I think so. Let me check. Yeah, 3.4 million members. That's a lot.
Hmm. There's no Wall Street bets yet for crypto though, huh?
You know what? I bet there is. I haven't I don't know it.
Superstonk like
is like an alternative to Wall Street Bets. I don't know if you follow that one. Superstonk is crazy. It's like on fire.
What is that one about?
That one is similar to Wall Street Bets. Essentially the same kind of DD. Mm-hmm. A lot of memes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You definitely want to check it out. Superstonk.
Okay. I'm going to have to check that one out. So what do you think, Kevin? You think this chef's about to go on a crazy run and you think it's just going to go back down to $18 again?
I mean, look, I think it's a $20 stock. But I also think that it's been a lot harder for momentum stocks to actually move and then stick. It feels like the momentum cycle is a lot shorter. Like last week we saw, for example, support.com, right? Support.com went up to like $59, and it went up in pre-market. Usually when you see that kind of pre-market move, it's all just retail. Let me see if I can pull it up here. And I remember in that pre-market, I was looking at it like, this is not sustainable. And I said on my live stream that I thought there was no way it was going to hold on to these gains through the end of the day. This is the hour candlestick here. So you saw it run during the day, and then the last 2 hours gave up on it. $59 was its high. Now it's at like $31, and it's kind of just doing that slow kind of bleed out that you start seeing in these momentum stocks. I'm seeing this cycle happen faster and faster now. I think there's more impatience, like people are taking their profits faster on these. And I think that makes it a little harder for something to become a momentum stock. Whereas with like GME and AMC, when you became a momentum stock, you were the thing for like a month. You know what I mean? Like you were embedded as a momentum stock. As opposed to support.com, which is here today, gone tomorrow, or like Meta Materials, it's here for a week and then it's gone. Nobody cares. Newegg was a thing for like 3 days, then it's gone, right? So I feel like that time frame has really compressed. I think it is possible that you could take something like Tattooed Chef and run it, but I think it would be very short-lived. So I think if you looked at your Tattooed Chef and you're like, oh man, it's at 40, dude, I would not be greedy about it at all. I'd be out.
You don't think a short-lived momentum is more of a sign of a hedge fund or not retail money? Just because I feel like retail money would be more long-term narratives, right? Like GameStop, and it's, I feel like a little bit more longer term.
Yeah, I mean, I think GameStop and AMC are almost like cultural stocks that are like embedded into investing. Now it like when you walk around or like when I meet people, even as part of the campaign, who say like, hey, I follow you on YouTube. You know, those that do follow me on YouTube, usually it's, let me say it this way. It's not uncommon for there to be some kind of GameStop or AMC reference, like, oh, you still in AMC or whatever. Right. But you don't get that with some of the other ones, like, oh, you still in Newegg? Like, nobody cares. Like those aren't embedded into the fabric of 2021's investing psyche, right? And I don't think Tattooed Chef would either. And I just want to be clear, that's not to say I don't think it'll run. I just don't think it's going to have that cultural movement. Now, it's also worth noting that I just pulled up here the Bloomberg Black app, and I don't see what they're seeing. Now, this is S3 Partners does this data, and I'm only at 24.3% short as a percentage of float here. So, you know, I'll pull up Ortex as well, but you know, I get very skeptical when people put data and stuff on Redfin, and I'd like to fact check this stuff because I've just seen people put bullcrap up too many times before.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely read back through the word choice, because I know in there they didn't say the overall percentage of float. They said they used some other word choice around float that I'm not familiar with, because once again, I'm not a trader. But just
I'll pull that up again.
Yeah. But anyways, in regards to Chef, the thing that's a little different there versus a lot of other stocks is you got such a loyal long-term investor community built in that stock. People like myself, right, that have, you know, 6-7 plus figures in it, that it doesn't matter. The stock could go up 50% tomorrow. We're not selling. And that's kind of a little similar.
Well, you should.
You know, that's just, that's what people told me when Tesla went up its first 50%. You know what I mean? Like if
TCF ain't no Tesla.
It's not, it ain't no Tesla, but guess what? You know, Tesla rose so dang quick because you had a huge long-term investor community in that stock that wasn't willing to sell. And then you had the shorts that keep, you know, they kept needing to cover. They kept having to buy up shares. And a lot of the longs just like, I'm not selling. Like, I don't care if it goes up another 50%, right? And so I think you got a very similar community in the Chef that's actually in that for the long term versus some of these other stocks that just don't have that. They don't have those long-term bases.
Jeremy, sorry if I missed it. Where's the Tattooed Chef community? I don't think I'd heard of it or seen it. Is it like on Reddit or?
Oh, it's on
comment
my channel.
Section. You haven't seen it? On Jeremy's videos.
You haven't seen it? Okay.
Got it.
I wasn't sure. It's my entire channel is the Chef community.
Okay. Got it.
Kind of like how my community was all Tesla back when Kevin wasn't even a bull on Tesla and he used to dog the stock.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah, I know about that.
Estimated short interest as a percentage of free float. So it's at 38.33 is what Ortex is showing. And Ortex and the Black App, they each do their own estimates. So 24% here, going back to here, we're at 38.33%. What people like to look at, though, is utilization over here. Just all the shares are borrowed or utilized. And your cost to borrow because of that is up substantially. I mean, it's up double what it was 7 days ago. You're paying 57%.
How is there such a huge discrepancy between the float of the two different softwares?
Well, because we only get, let me find out exactly when it was last actually reported, but we only get exchange reported short data every like 2 weeks. And in between, you have companies that try to, they read whatever sticks they look at, whatever data they look at, and then they try to put together an estimate. Like, well, we think it's here now, or we think it's here now. They're often very wrong. So it's all kind of a crapshoot sometimes. But what I look for is if they're all inflecting in the same direction, like up, then and they agree with each other in direction, that's often good.
Jeez. It's like trying to predict the weather. It's so hard. I don't understand how people use this data that is so short-lived for like a day.
Yeah, but that's why people call for more transparency in this, you know, stock market we're in.
Yeah, and if you read through a lot of that post, you know, if you get into the details of that post they made there, they're basically saying what is going on there is straight up illegal, according to the SEC, and they keep calling them crook brokers between the brokers and the short sellers. And they kind of get into detail there about it. So interesting, you know.
Who knows? Speaking of interesting, Kevin, did you sue CNN? You got to tell us that story.
Oh, yeah, let me give this piece of data here really quick, and then I'll gladly hit that. So worth noting here on Bloomberg, percentage of short interest, almost 29% on the Bloomberg. But this was reported as of August 13th. So you can see it's 2 weeks of dated, right? S3 does give it a score of 88 of a short squeeze potential, which is pretty high. So it definitely has that potential there. But I just haven't been seeing short squeezes go so nuts recently. So, hey, you know, hopefully it works out. You buy some call options. Maybe it's worthy of the roulette wheel placement, right? So, yeah, CNN, they literally ran an article saying there are no Democrats competing against the governor. And I'm like, hello, have you not seen us like on the debate stage, which had our debate last week, you know, on the Associated Press, Washington Post, Times, you name it. We've been in like, all the publications, right?
Kevin, by the way, you did amazing in that debate.
Yes, I got to say.
Yeah, you were on fire, man. I mean, if you were only that good on Millennial Money, we might have a good channel.
Wow. Well, thank you.
Unfortunately, the people you got to talk with are a little smarter on here versus who you're on the stage with that night.
You know what? We need a moderator.
That's a good one.
Somebody
moderator. Well, thank you for that.
That's what we call a backhanded compliment, by the way.
It's a neg.
All right, Kevin, your response.
Well, hey, you know, I think you guys are brilliant compared to some of the other competitors. I'll be very transparent about that. I'd rather have a debate with any of you guys any day of the week. But yeah, look, you know, we sent them a cease and desist letter, and then rather than mention us, they changed the article right after they got it from there are no Democrats competing against the governor to there are no party-backed Democrats. And it's like, oh, they're literally going out of their way. Yeah, not to mention us.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And you know what it is? It's, look, here's what's really happening. You have the left, which is we just want to brand the whole election in California as a Trumpian takeover. And on the right, you've got Larry Elder, who's the perfect image for the Democrats to use, because they're like, look, here are pictures of Larry Elder with Donald Trump. Here are things he said about women, whether it's true or not. Here are things about race or the minimum wage or whatever. And it's all these things that make him seem like he's to the right of Trump. And so it's the perfect battle for CNN and Fox to fight each other. So you basically just have a war of media. You got the Gavin Newsom camp on the left and the CNNs. And you got the Fox News with the Trumpian extreme. And so they're going at it for views, because that's where the views are. Because when you put these two extremes together, it's like putting, what do you put in, like a baking soda and vinegar together? You know, it's like, right? And they make money off those fireworks. Then here's Kevin that's like, hey, I've got moderate solutions to help fix California. And they're like, get out of our volcano. We want destruction.
But you know what, Kevin? Also, it makes me think that you almost have to play into that because it gets media exposure. I mean, you got to think, too, if CNN has your face on the front page, is like, you know, Kevin just said this. I mean, at some point, exposure is exposure.
Yes, and that's exactly how the politicians play, and it's actually exactly why things have gotten so politically divisive, because the politicians know if they say something crazy, they get media coverage, you know? They like AOC says Jerome Powell should be fired, everybody's talking about it, you know? You get AOC going, well, you know, I mean, he's doing the best he could. Nobody's going to cover that crap, right? So then you get this, like, on the other side. That's AOC. On the other side, you get Madison Cawthorn, the representative from North Carolina, famous for being in the wheelchair, and he stood up during, I can't remember what it was, but there was some, I think the Republican National Convention or whatever last year, stood up for it. Wanted to invoke, what was it, the 25th or 26th? I can't remember which one it is. I think it was the 25th Amendment. But basically calling the president incompetent during the Afghanistan crisis and encouraging him to be removed by Congress, right? Like, that's the kind of stuff that gets media attention. So they want the fireworks, the explosion, the insanity. And then those are the people who get more media coverage. And then guess what happens? Those are the people who get elected. So we end up with this insane politicians.
All right, so let's brainstorm some ideas about what you could say that's kind of crazy, but we'll get some media attention. Leave the comments down below. Let us know what can Kevin say that's just going to get really crazy attention. You know what I was thinking? I think if they were really smart, they could really run with the story of like, oh, how dare they? A YouTuber trying to run for governor? Like, they could really play into that story. Like, a social media personality? Oh, my gosh, here we go again. Who's next? Logan Paul? It's just, I feel like there's a story there that could definitely be exploited. I don't know what you want to say, but.
Kevin, hey, you should, instead of the $1 million debate, it should have been like the $1 million wrestling match, the mud wrestling match.
Boxing match.
Yeah.
Boxing match for sure. Boxing, yes.
Oh my gosh. And definitely. $2 million boxing
match. No, $1 million is good, but dude, definitely call it out with the boxing. Not Larry Elder, though. You don't want to be. You're against the elder abuse.
That was so good. I'm not into elder abuse.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But it's true, though. You guys bring up a good point. You know, all that media coverage, you know, I'm convinced that's one of the things that got Trump in office, man. He was covered by the media like crazy, especially in that, you know, before the Republican National Convention, CNN would cover him all the time. Can you believe what Trump just said? Trump. Mm-hmm. They shoved him down everybody's throat so much, and they tried to make everybody hate him. A group ended up saying they love him, and then he ended up being the Republican, you know, representative. Then he ended up obviously winning the election. It's just, it's crazy, man. They do kind of want the circus. It's unfortunate.
They want the circus. Yep. And that's the thing is, if you're a moderate, it's like there's a reason why moderates don't get in. What you got is you've got Bernie Sanders. Come on, he's not a moderate, you know. So it's just what you end up with.
100%. And so what's all this Fed stuff about, Kevin? Can you break this down? I didn't get to see your video earlier today. Fed, AOC, what's that whole situation about?
Yeah, so you've got, I mean, this is a big culmination of a lot of things. First, you've got this disaster, obviously, of a lot of folks complaining about inflation. And so this has become a debate in Congress. Like, inflation is becoming politicized. Oh, we can't print more money because of inflation. But then on the other side, no, we have to. Because we have to take care of all of the social programs that we want to do and the big social infrastructure package. Whatever. You get these negotiations going on. And so really what happened today is AOC came out. She's a member of the squad. They're deemed to be either far left or very progressive, which I say that in air quotes because I think people can be progressive and not be far left. But anyway, she came out and said, hey, we should have a different chairperson of the Federal Reserve. Biden should not renew Jerome Powell. Jerome Powell should be fired because Jerome Powell has not done enough for climate change and has not done enough for economic and racial equality, which I made a video about. And I said, you realize that's actually your job, AOC. It is your job to help people learn financial education in schools and to minimize or to give people equal opportunity, make sure people have equal opportunity. That's not Jerome Powell's job. Jerome Powell's job is maintaining our monetary system, controlling interest rates, right? He's the macro, the big umbrella, I refer to it as. So that was what my video was about. But I mean, that's... that opens up this whole dialogue about our Federal Reserve and basically firing the Fed. And let's open it up to you guys. What do you guys think?
Jeez.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Fed has really gotten involved in so many other things besides just making sure the dollar is stable and that inflation's not too out of control. And it really does seem like they're pulled in so many directions. And now, like you said, inflation is politicized. So it's like, do we want to keep adding more money to the economy? Is that helping people? Is it boosting the markets? And it's wild to watch this.
Well, it's worth mentioning what you said there. Like, I kind of think of it almost like this funnel. And so Jerome's at the top printing money, and the first layer, all the banks, and then you got like hedge funds and asset owners, like stock owners and real estate owners. And by the time it gets all the way to the bottom, there's a lot less of it left. But yeah. Then you start getting like the impoverished communities that start benefiting because finally like home equity lines of credit come back and they can get lower interest rates on credit cards or whatever, right? This gives them an opportunity to build wealth. So the fear is, well, if you stop printing money too soon, the poorer folks might never have that opportunity to participate. But the Fed can't provide any money to the bottom without going through the top. But Congress can do that.
That's where you all of a sudden get into that discussion about, potentially the $1,000 checks to folks every month, right? That make under 50K, yeah. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
What's your two cents, Andre?
I just feel like something I don't know AOC personally, obviously, but it just feels like that's something politicians say all the time because of how complex the economy and the government system is. It's just one of those things that I see how beneficial it could be for her to say something like that. Because of course people are going to agree. Of course they're going to be like, yeah, totally. We should be helping the little guy and we should, but that's not Jerome Powell's job. But I just don't think people know enough about the system and the processes that it just sounds like, of course, how could we disagree with that? Like everyone agrees, but that's not how you do it. And so it just seems like that's something you would say if you're trying to play into the crowd. And I don't know.
Got to get more AOC votes.
Yeah, exactly. That seems kind of like what that is.
Andre, your feed's been cutting out a little bit here and there. I just want to make sure I fact check this. It sounded like you said you're close friends with AOC. That's correct, right?
Yes.
Just want to get that
best friends. Best friends.
You guys see eye to eye on everything?
Everything, 100%.
Everybody's got dirt on
all those. That's so right. That's what the dungeon's for in your new house.
Yeah. Hey, that's not what it's for. It serves a different purpose.
That's for different
Pokemon cards. Show us your pokies, yeah. Andre. Show us them.
Hey. So I this weekend I bought these, which are a stack of 16. Kevin's like, oh god, here we go. Another car. There it is. All right, so 16 base.
Alakazam!
All right, so check this out. This is a PSA 10 shadowless. You see how there's no shadow? There's no border right here?
Yeah.
You guys, is it in focus? I can't. There it is.
Yeah.
So, there okay, so that's one of them. Here's another one. This card right now on eBay is going for $40,000.
Asking.
Yeah, it didn't sell for that. It's just being asked for that. This card right here is the most valuable and the rarest, actually not the most valuable, but the rarest in quantity out of this whole stack and probably out of the entire Pokemon base set collection, which is Chansey. There's only 15 of these in the world. So this one is going on eBay for 50K. Not well, sold. Just
15. I mean, that's like 50. How many investors Tattooed Chef has.
50, 50. This is the Holy Grail. Hey, hey, this is the Holy Grail right here. Do you guys know who this is? It's the Fire Lizard.
Is that, is that Pikachu?
What's that?
Is that Pikachu? I'm kidding.
God, I realize that people that are listening to this, they're like, what are they talking about? So anyway, this card right here alone sold last for $105,000.
Oh my God.
Independently. This card right here.
So Kevin, you would never do something like that.
Kevin's like, no, I probably drive it. And
why? Is it because you're just not into Pokemon cards, or it's just you wouldn't want to spend
Kevin like cheap money. 3D printed toys, like scimitars and hammers, you know, just like that's what I like, okay?
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious that every one of us has our own like frugal habits about everything that we find ridiculous in whatever each of us buys. But then we go off and like we buy a, like in Graham's case, a Ford GT, or whatever. Jeremy's case, a tattooed chef, you know, things like that.
Yeah, Jeremy's just a collector of it. He's going to hold
he's going to corner them, the whole market.
Oh man, I might own the whole company soon. That's sick though, Andre. Quick question. So the Charizard you were just saying, $105,000, I believe.
Yes.
How much for a PSA 10 Charizard? A first edition, non-shadowless, first edition.
So yeah, the only difference between mine and the one that Jeremy's talking about is it has a first edition stamp, and that last sold for $380,000.
And that's not even shadowless, right?
It is shadowless. The first edition one is. But this one is more rare than that other one I just mentioned.
Whoa.
It's crazy. So this set, by the way, I found after we did our last week's Millennial Money podcast. After that one, like as soon as we logged off, I was like on eBay. And I was like, guys, check this out. This is so cool. And then I asked every one of you, should I do it? And you're like, I don't know. And Graham's like, I like it. So I know Graham approves. Graham approves.
Yeah,
so that's
I told Andre that if he wants to sell it, I would pay the same price that he paid for it.
No, okay. Graham was over at our house yesterday, I think, and he's like, Andre, how much you want to sell this set for? He's like, he's like, would you sell it for, you know, $5,000 over what I paid for it? And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. He's like, really? He was like right into it.
It's good. I honestly like the set, and I think it'll be worth one day $500,000.
Easily. Yeah. In 3 to 5 years, I think. Maybe sooner. Yeah. Hey, if an NFT picture of a rock sold for $1.2 million, did you guys see that?
Yes.
By the way, I also want to correct myself. I think last week I said one of the things that held me back from buying more NFTs was usability and utility last week. So I just want to correct myself for saying that for Steve Aoki's NFTs, because that's the one I had. He actually has a whole tier and a structure of like depending on how much stuff you own, like a point tier list. And depending on how many points you have, you get different perks. So like that 100 points or whatever it is, you get to go to his concerts for free. You get to meet him. It's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
So
Blau was the one who did that a few months ago. He NFT'd his entire new album. And gosh, how much did he end up getting for that? Like 11 million? It was like 10 million. Or it was like $8 million he got for his album.
Yeah.
And whoever buys that gets rights to his music. They get other perks. They could get concert tickets. I think there are a lot of things that you could do with NFTs. So but on the other hand, you have the 12-year-old who just made $400,000 selling an NFT of a pixelated whale. He was 12 years old. He spent $200 just making this thing at $400,000.
Wait, how did a 12-year-old spend $400? That doesn't
$200.
$200. No.
He spent $200. He created a whale NFT and made $400,000.
Okay, so here's what I was thinking. I was thinking of maybe, potentially, not now maybe, but if somebody who is good at doing this, imagine creating an NFT token set for this. So you could attach this as the fundamental sort of asset that it's attached to. You could trade the NFT tokens, or you can claim them for perks or whatever it is, or you can, I think it's pretty cool. It's basically fractional ownership with a utility twist to it. Kevin's like, what?
I think this is
I get what you're saying. It's an easy way to transact interest in something. I mean, you could do that with real estate in theory. You know, you tokenize real estate. It's no different than just owning a percentage of the property. But it then becomes the coin is essentially just a representation of your ownership in a house or in whatever this product is that you're holding there. Or heck. You know, I bought so many 3D printed products from this guy. He sent me a whole axe with Meet Kevin on it, you know? So, hey, maybe we can NFT this axe and do that. but yeah, I know what you mean. I still think it's stupid. Sorry.
Hey, I think it's awesome. I think it's a cool idea.
I think this
I like your cards a lot more than the whole NFT stuff. I think the NFT stuff is moronic.
Give me a reason why you don't like it. Give me a reason why it's a dumb idea.
Well, specifically because a lot of the people who are creating these values have vested interests in NFTs being successful. Logan Paul buys NFTs, but he's also selling NFTs that he creates, right? You've got Visa bestowing, like we talked about this last week, right? Visa buys an NFT, but they're also trying to be the payment processor for NFT transactions. So it's just, it's all a lie.
How is that any different than buying any other asset? Yeah, well, for anything, real estate. Oh, of course you're buying real estate because you want to resell it later. Oh, how dare you?
Kevin, I think you would have said the same thing about Bitcoin, as would I, 4 years ago.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
That leads us to a good thing, okay? Let's talk about this for a moment, okay? We got people spending fortunes on Pokemon cards. We got people spending fortunes on NFTs. We got people spending, you know, $10 billion or whatever market caps are on cryptos now, right? That a lot of them aren't doing literally anything. And is this a sign that we're in a bubble time right now? How much pretty much useless stuff is trading at ridiculous valuations and people are willing to just spend whatever on it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely true. Concerning when people have so much money that they're like, what can I spend it on right now? Because it's sitting in a bank account earning nothing. Where can I put it? It's certainly concerning.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, and it's not like a discussion around like, where's the safest place I can put it or the place that I'm going to get 5% a year or 10% a year. It's like, what can 3X the best over the next 3 years?
So sometimes I wonder, though, is that as a result of just having purely too much money or just a shift in how millennials invest in that? Maybe because millennials feel so disenfranchised by the hand that they were dealt, maybe their mentality of investing is completely different than what the previous generation was, which is being completely content with 7 to 10% per year. And maybe for millennials, it's like, hey, I feel like I'm behind because literally every research number says that I am. Instead of doing this get rich slow method, I'm just going to gamble my money in whatever it might be.
You know what I think it was? I think this last year was such an anomaly. I think just people had a lot of time at home. They weren't working. we had a lot of money enter the economy, and I think people took to the stock market. And just, I think the returns that we've seen over the last year have a really distorted view on what it's like to invest. And I just think a lot of people have this expectation now that if they're not earning 30 to 50% a year, they're not doing well. So it's going to be interesting. One of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to top out at a certain point and just remain flat, and people are going to get bored, and they're just going to keep playing riskier and riskier plays, or there could be a drop and a lot of people just be like, oh, you know what? I'm out. This is a scam. Stock market's rigged. So it's going to be one or the other. I wouldn't be surprised if we tend just to trade flat for a little bit. I think that would shake out a lot of the people who are just impatient.
Well, yeah, because anybody with call options is going to get burned. They're going to get toasted. So that's why Jeremy's got to be careful. But you know,
well, what's interesting with NFTs, you guys remember they kind of died off, right? So NFTs are making a huge comeback again. So I'm wondering if we're going into that again, momentum type of investing. Where I completely agree with Graham. We do have a distorted perception of what traditional investment returns should look like. But, you know, in some way, I do wonder if it's just a millennial perspective and a mindset.
The trend on NFT searches right now is just very interesting, because it's basically what you said, Andre. You know, you had this run in like February, March. And now you're getting this sort of run again over here on NFTs.
But here's the thing: from March until now, it's not that long. I mean, we went through a time of maybe 2 months where people were like, those NFTs, I'm just not interested in them anymore. So
yeah, that's true.
I think that's barely any time.
Fine. But this was also during the crypto dip. Remember, crypto kind of peaked around April 12th or whatever, and May 12th or something. So it's almost kind of like, it was associated with the rise in crypto prices, because this was also, you know, when crypto prices were at peak, and now crypto prices are rising again. So I wonder the correlation.
The only positive thing I will say about it is, you know, at least that, as bad as it sounds, at least that money's not necessarily flowing into stocks, right? So let's say the guy has an extra $1 million. He wants to buy an NFT rather than put it in the stock market. Well, at least it's not coming in the stock market to make stocks even more overvalued, because we know as far as large caps go, large caps are valuations are already super high. The deals are in the small caps, but you know, if all that money had been in the stock market, then it would overprice big tech even more, right? And there probably wouldn't be many opportunities in small caps. So, or in real estate, let's imagine everybody was just trying to buy real estate right now. The guy, you know, let's say Andre with the 100, you know, or whatever you paid for the Pokemon cards. I know it was listed for $250,000. Let's say instead you were like, I'm going to buy a $250,000 house in, I don't know, North Las Vegas or Las Vegas, right? That just jacks real estate market up even more, right? You take another house off the market, you might have had a bid against that person. So I guess that's the only positive maybe we can find in this situation.
Do you think, Jeremy, that this, this phase that we're in, is it just a phase, or do you think it's maybe a kind of a beginning of a long-term trend of people just kind of seeking these higher risk opportunities? I'm wondering, do you guys remember that study that, who was it? Warren Buffett said it, how we should expect returns to be closer to like 3 or 4% going forward. So,
yeah.
I mean, I know there was no way he could have predicted that, but I'm wondering if a part of what contributes to that is this kind of mentality where it's like, I want to put my money into riskier assets.
I think it won't come down until money starts to dry up and people get hurt, right? And all of a sudden lose a bunch of money. Because if you know, after you get hurt, like psychologically, just as a human, all of a sudden you're like, I don't want to do that again. That hurt bad, right? You know what I mean? You ever had a really bad hangover? Not me, because I don't drink. But you ever had a really bad hangover, right? And you're like, you know, I don't want to drink again. That was so stupid. And then, you know, a little time passes. And next thing you know, you're out partying again and, you know, getting wasted. And then you're like, you know, have a bad hangover. You're like, I don't want to drink again. And then some time passes. That's kind of how it is in investing, right? You get hurt really bad, and then you go really safe. And then as you have more and more success and that pain gets further and further away, you can invest riskier and riskier and riskier as time goes on, right? And so I think that's a little food for thought there. And I think that's ultimately what happens.
That's a great point. You know what it reminds me of? Like if you ever get pulled over, right after you drive off, you are driving so safe that rest of the way. You're driving the speed limit. Give it a month, you're back to normal.
Right.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
In that same analogy, then, what is the catalyst for getting pulled over? What do you guys think is going to hit the fan first? Because I think you're right. In retrospect, it's easy to be like, oh my gosh, we should have seen it. Like JPEGs of rocks were selling for over $1 million. But
listen, we could be looking back and like that was a sign. When a rock, when a virtual rock sells for 1.2 right. million, that's the, like, how can you do right. that? We're going to look back at that rock. That rock is going to be the sign. Just watch. Let's see how well this ages.
That was the inflection point, as Kevin likes to call it.
I can already see Graham's next video later this week. NFTs are easy money.
Do this now.
Yeah.
Five simple steps.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be the infinite money glitch.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think interest rates. I think rising interest rates at this point. That's the only thing that I could see maybe affecting something. But but people have to run out of money too, because right now there's so much on the sidelines that if we have a 5% dip, I guarantee everyone's like, all right, let me buy it. So at what point is it going to be where people are too afraid to buy that dip? Right now they're not afraid, and they have so much money to keep, you know, buying in, and you know, if it drops further, okay, I have more. So what's going to scare people off so that if it drops 5%, people are like, nope, I'm not investing because I think it's going to drop more.
I would 100% agree with Graham, but I'd also add that I think crypto either like crashing or stable coins collapsing and then regulation, for some reason, I could see it being connected to the entire economy and maybe the government looking closer at other things and you know, corporations maybe being more compliant with, I don't know, environmentally friendly. I don't know. It could trigger some sort of an event that I could see, you know, crypto being that catalyst too. So I would say interest rates in crypto. I don't know. What do you think, Jeremy?
The other thing is I think another reason why people aren't playing with much fear is they feel like Papa Fed's going to be there. Papa Powell, you know what I mean? Like if things start to go south and, you know, this falls and that falls, Papa Powell's going to be there to save us, right? So, you know, that's a factor there. By the way, Kevin, real quick, back to the whole, you know, fire and Jerome Powell thing. Like, is that necessarily possible? How do you do that? You know, and do they have somebody that, like, who's next to take Powell's place if, let's say, Powell got kicked out for whatever reason, or he's just like, I'm done with you guys, I retire?
Yeah, the president picks, and the president has a choice to renom Powell, essentially. You know, I'm pretty sure Powell, he came from the board. Oftentimes they graduate up from the board. So they're already in the Fed, right? They're already in that, network, but it's basically up to Biden right now. I don't know what the date is though.
Yeah. And what's Biden and Powell's relationship? Is it pretty good? I know it could get rough with Trump. How's it with him?
You know, I think everyone's very happy with Powell right now in government. I think there are some tensions in Congress that come up in negotiations about inflation, but I don't think that the White House would want to even risk any instability in markets by trying to replace the Fed chairperson right now. So you replace Powell, it's like, well, who are you going to get? You know, what if you get a Gensler type in there who starts going, that's it. We're banning payment for order flow, but except instead of payment for order flow, it's we're raising rates tomorrow, skipping the taper, right. You know, or you get a loose cannon or something like that, right?
But
like,
he doesn't even
that
have
would
to
create
be
a lot
loose
of uncertainty.
Cannon,
right? What?
Sorry, he doesn't even have to be a loose cannon. Just that uncertainty by itself is like, oh, you got rid of Powell? Who are you going to put in there? That's it. The beginning of that could shake up markets. Yeah.
Yep.
I feel like
that's exactly it.
I feel like whoever they put as Fed chair, and I've watched them all since, you know, 2008, 2009, I feel like they're like the most stoic people. You can't get an emotional reaction out of those people. They're like, you know, I feel like they probably just like give them a test, like slap them in the face like five times. And then if they have any sort of emotional reaction, like you can't be it. But if you don't, I mean, you listen to each one of these and they're just so stoic, you know, from Powell to Yellen to Bernanke. No emotion at all out of those folks.
they just hire pilots and flight attendants. You can't shake those people.
Yeah, they're just, you know, like, you know, just you know. But anywho, you know, people think Powell's might be the most exciting of the recent ones. If people are around to listen to Yellen, oh man, you want to talk about putting you to sleep? Listen to Janet Yellen talk for 2 hours. Woo!
And you know what? And she gets paid like $500,000 to talk for an hour, 2 hours.
Whoa!
By the banks.
Yeah, her speaking fees are insane. How much did she make last year? I think it was like $8 million just from speaking.
How much? That wasn't last year. That was in the last 2 years.
Was it eight? I thought it was $8
million. It was in the last 2 years, though, not in the last year.
$8 million? That's what Graham calls a bad month. My gosh.
Terrible month.
$8 million?
But she's speaking, yeah.
$8 million? That's what... Kevin's down on his Tesla options. I mean, I'm sorry, Kevin. Oh. That was low blow. I'm sorry. You chose violence against me today, so I got to come back a little bit. Okay, so
it's all right. Oh man, yeah, that is crazy. That's a lot of money that she makes. Gee whiz.
Why would she make that much? Like,
I don't know, but apparently she also has a stamp collection worth between $15,000 and $50,000. So it sounds like she's a collector too.
Wow. So I bet she has the equivalent of a first edition Charizard as a stamp.
Stamps? Pieces of paper? Ah, what an idiot. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, I can relate, but hey, somebody should make an NFT set of, like, you know, the CryptoPunks that we were talking about last time. But instead of CryptoPunks, it's just like talking head, like bobbleheads of people in government. That would be sick.
I don't know.
I would assume they would have that, right?
Like, I don't know if you could use their likeness, though.
Oh, you don't need permission. That's blockchain.
Ah, great. There we go.
Just put it up there.
Oh, man.
Come on. That'd be awesome.
Well, hey, you bring up a good point, Andre, because I will say the baby boomer generation and even the older generation, they would invest sometimes in some weird stuff like old tools, stamps, like Kevin brought up their stamp collection. You know, they bought some weird stuff, you know, let's be honest.
Bottle caps.
Yeah. Remember like old vintage, like Coca-Cola signs and stuff like that. Yeah. That was a thing.
You know what? We should talk briefly. Speaking of all this, you mentioned Gary. We should talk about Robinhood.
Robinhood, yeah.
Banned payment for order flow. Kevin, you want to enlighten us on what's going on with that? I saw your video. That was a great video. That's why.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, look. So, which, by the way, after it, I did a little more looking around on Bloomberg, and what's crazy is Robinhood makes money. One of the ways they make money, one of the main ways they make money is by negotiating our trades with wholesalers known as market makers. And the market makers give us a better price than the exchange. And then Robinhood and the market makers take a cut. And so they get to argue that 95% of the time we're better off anyway because they exist. But they also make money in the meantime. That's sort of the argument of the commission-free trading model. Gary Gensler says, hey, well, this is not as transparent as it should be. Maybe we need to re-envision this. Maybe that means, and his quote was, banning something, the effect of banning payment for order flow is on the table, right? That immediately led Robinhood, obviously, to sink as low as like 8% yesterday. It's recovered much of that since its low yesterday because most people on Wall Street don't actually think payment for order flow is going to get banned. Robinhood only represented about 20% of payment for order flow in the month of June. But I will tell you, the big money they make with payment for order flow has actually lately been coming from options and crypto. Not just regular stock trading, options and crypto. That's when they're making a killing on these spreads. So that's why they make it so easy to do options, because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, did you guys see PayPal also is getting into trading potentially and becoming a brokerage as well, which I thought was interesting because you guys remember Zecco Trading? This was like way back in 2012. There was a free stock trading app called Zecko, which was later rebranded to TradeKing. And then Zecko and TradeKing merged to form Ally Invest. They rebranded to Ally Invest. And so it's interesting that PayPal now wants to get into the game, and maybe they're trying to capitalize on Robinhood, you know, potentially getting banned from payment for order flow. And that would be interesting because they're kind of positioned to do, you know, stuff with crypto because they've obviously integrated Bitcoin. And so I could see PayPal, you know, taking a huge cut of Robinhood's revenue there.
Everyone wants to get into the stock brokerage game right now. That's what it seems like. A lot. Listen, if PayPal gets in, then at some point probably Apple will get in. Google could create their own platform. Amazon could do Amazon trading. I mean, at what point does it end?
Right.
But it's working. I mean, the thing is, if Google or Apple did their own platform, I mean, geez, how many people who are already integrated in the system? They already have everything on file, just as easy as like, you shopped here today. I know the app, that sort of app already exists, but you shopped at Walgreens. Would you like to invest $5 in Walgreens?
No, yes. Sir. I'd like to invest $1 million.
But like, I mean, something like that, they just have so many other ways to integrate. If they see you
theoretically
searched for something, then, you know, you could invest in that.
Theoretically speaking, what happens if a bunch of tech companies started doing that? Like, tech companies have so much data and so much info on us. What would happen to brokerages? I mean, just what would happen to the market in general if a bunch of these companies like Apple, like Amazon, like Google started to just offer the same products and started to compete with each other? Is that?
Yeah, I think it would be a race to the bottom. I mean, they would do anything they could to get your business. And I think ultimately that would benefit the consumer.
Sure.
There's no way it wouldn't.
Yeah, it ends up, it's probably going to, what's probably going to happen is going to be similar to what happened in the banking industry back in probably the 80s and 90s when, and even into the, you know, the Great Recession even forced us more, where almost everybody kind of got forced into being under either Chase's umbrella, Bank of America, or Wells Fargo for the most part, right? They just kind of kept swallowing up banks. And the same thing will probably happen in the brokerage game over time, where the biggest ones will end up buying out the other ones. So maybe, you know, maybe Voyager never becomes a big company. Maybe they get bought out by Coinbase or Robinhood. And, you know, PayPal maybe acquires one of these players. Maybe PayPal ends up acquiring somebody like Robinhood long term, right? Because PayPal's a beast compared to Robinhood. You know what I mean? Like, that's like night and day. Maybe even the big banks get involved. Maybe Chase ends up buying out some of these brokerages, you know,
just a bunch of consolidation.
Because that's what ends up happening. Everybody wants to compete in this space. I don't know anybody that doesn't. Crypto brokerage, stock brokerage, everybody wants to do it. Everybody's in on it. And it's probably going to be, like Graham said, a race to the bottom. And then there's consolidation that happens and some players can't make it. So they want to get sold out. So,
yeah.
It's intriguing though. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I think the reason a lot of these companies are doing it because the hefty valuations. The more you're into, especially in fintech, the more people are like, oh man, valuation because they're doing this, they're doing that. You know, there's so much excitement around all that, right? And so, if you're getting that premium on your valuation, you know, the CEO, you know, a big part of how a CEO is graded is the stock price at the end of the day. You know, revenues, profitability, those sorts of things are absolutely important. But at the end of the day, like, the stock price is important, as much to a CEO as anybody. Because, you know, if a stock lags for years, the board of directors starts having some major pressure on them to get that CEO out. So, right.
That's why sometimes investing in tech is like, I don't know, I'm sometimes afraid of it just because it seems like it could just run on promises for years. Like, hey, we're getting into everything now, basically. We're doing trading. We're going to get into health. We're going to make you live forever.
Oh, wait. Run on promises? I can tell you there's nothing even close to run on promises. Your little crypto stuff, okay? I can tell you whatever PayPal's doing. Okay, I'm about to go off. No, let's just cut it there, okay? change the subject before I
start. Let's entertain this idea.
I mean, crypto, not half of them. 90%, 95% of these cryptos doing nothing. You're going to tell me at least PayPal is trying to actually do something and actually will do something versus 95% of these cryptos that are just like, $20 billion valuation. We deserve it. Oh my gosh. Our crypto's going to the moon.
Hey, I agree with you. 90% of them are vaporware. But
yeah, over 90%.
Probably over 90%. That is probably true.
At least some of the companies in the tech bubble had like a little bit of revenue, at least, right? These cryptos. You know,
that's why I only stick to two, and I don't care what other cryptos promise. And I know everybody promises the world. They're just like, we're gonna do this, we're gonna need payments for machine to machine payment. It's like, I don't care. Just stick with like two simple things that I know are going to work, and that's it. I don't care what their promises are.
There's too many coins out there that, in my opinion, they try to solve something that was never a problem to begin with. So I still stick with like Bitcoin, Ethereum. I see the most random uses. Just I can't even give you examples because of just how obscure they are, and they come up so often. Like, this coin is meant to digitalize this and improve the efficiency of transferring from this thing. It's like, I don't know. It just seems really just a whole bunch of buzzwords that really go nowhere.
It's definitely a lot of marketing. I mean, I get hit up all the time by all these different crypto brokers or coins or whatever. They're like, we'll sponsor you. We just want a 30-second mention or whatever. And I'm like, no crypto. And the exception of like BlockFi. I honestly should have like a Coinbase link, but I don't. But like stuff like that, whatever. But the individual coins, I get very nervous.
Same here.
This video, by the way, is sponsored by SafeMoon.
Don't say that.
Get your safe down. That was a joke.
Graham's now going to get clipped.
Yeah,
that's going on Twitter now.
Oh my gosh, dude! Oh no!
Dang it! Exposed.
Let's trim that part.
That's going on Millennial Money Clips, by the way.
All right, just that, like just 3 seconds.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, so, what else are you guys buying this week?
I bought a house. Not for myself though.
Oh, Kevin, no
actually.
Yeah. I walked into this fixer. It had a ton of offers on it. It's in like an 850 to 900K neighborhood. I paid 715 for it. You know, I think I'm only gonna put like 45 into it. I've got the labor available right now while we're waiting for some other permits. So I'm like,
how'd you get that offer accepted though? If there are multiple offers and it was worth way more.
I mean, there were a lot of offers. In fact, there was another, I shouldn't say another. There was at least first of all, there were a ton of home buyers that were offering more money. There was also a hedge fund apparently that was offering 707, like just one of the BlackRock types or whatever. Somewhere around there is what I heard. I don't know. But lots of home buyers. I got it just offering cash close as soon as the seller's out. And then I got a call like, hey, the seller's getting a moving truck this weekend. Can you close, Tuesday? I'm like, sure.
Wow. So that was what put it over the edge. It's just you could close in a matter of days. And obviously.
Yeah. And really people know me in Ventura County too. Like when I write an offer and I remove my contingencies, it's going to happen. Like it's done. Yeah. I think a lot of people just get worried about somebody's going to come in with their inspector and then the termite guy's going to find some termite droppings. Oh no. Rat turds too. I don't care about any of that crap. I've seen it all. I've dealt with it all. It doesn't matter to me. So I'm happy.
That's cool. When I bought this house, I removed all the contingencies too, just because I didn't want this house to escape. I was like, I don't care.
Good.
I can fix it. Good for you. Don't care. Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. Kevin, that's smart.
You're only 2 weeks away from becoming governor of California. So the big question is, are you planning on still staying in Southern California? Would you ever move up to Northern California or how's that work?
Well, thank you. We would move to Sacramento. So we better get our renovations done.
Wow.
Nice. Wow. So you have to live in the governor's mansion, as I call it.
No, you don't have to, but you know, you're going to be working there every day. It's like, where do you want to have your meetings? Nobody's going to come to Ventura. You know, how are you going to work with the assembly and the Senate up there? You got to be there.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, I was doing a little research on this whole governor thing the other night. And so Gavin Newsom last year, right, got caught at French Laundry, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Napa Valley, right?
Right.
Yep.
By the way, I only know of that place because it was in a Drake song off Take Care. I just want to be clear about that. Okay. And he referenced that. So it's got to be some hobnob place, you know, to like be referenced in a Drake song. Like, he dinners at French Laundry in Napa Valley. So anyways, so he got caught. And what happened? Why did that blow up so big?
Well, essentially, while we were at the height of COVID lockdowns in April of last year, our schools are shut down, our businesses are shut down, a third of California's restaurants are going bankrupt. He's dining with lobbyists from the tech industry, getting millions of dollars of donations at a restaurant. Meanwhile, one third of California's restaurants are going bankrupt, and his kids are going to private school that's not shut down. And he's getting donations from Netflix to get special exemptions to let Netflix film during the pandemic and be open. But all the other small businesses in California get screwed. So that's been like one of the biggest scars on his legacy.
And he's not wearing a mask.
Yeah, boy, yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. Oh, God forbid. Newsom wears a mask.
Yeah. Wow,
it's crazy. But look, I mean, I just, the more we look at it, the more it's just I don't know, I think we talked about that, maybe we touched on it last week, but because the news just broke last week, about 2 months ago news broke that Gavin Newsom overstated fire prevention by 690%, and then last week these leaked emails came out from the Cal Fire chief that Newsom appointed. And they're like, hey, we've been getting a lot of pressure about the 690% thing. Should we remove the original promise from the website? Right. And it's just like, this is just like politics at its fine. It's just pure, like almost blatant corruption. I feel it's just so nasty. It's dirty. I don't know. So I bought a house. What did you guys buy? What are y'all buying? We got a minute left here. Let's wrap up with what we're buying.
Crypto. I've been buying more Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Really? At the high?
I dollar cost average. I'm not dumping in, you know. I just have a set amount that I buy every day, and I've just been keeping it.
I didn't know you were dollar cost averaging, my man.
Yeah, no, I've been doing that since January or February of this year.
Oh, good, awesome, great. Yeah, same here. Dollar cost averaging, crypto, stock market, and of course these.
Are you guys over a million into crypto yet?
Oh, no.
Almost, no, but not quite.
Jeremy, I mean, your Voyager token's going to the moon. You had a million yet?
Is it really? Don't excite me.
Well,
like
I don't know. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I didn't look.
Dang it.
It's just, yeah, I'm hoping. I'm being hopeful
I meant
for
to
you.
Say ground.
A penny.
Sorry, when you said ground, I thought about how you gave me whole bean 1337 coffee, and I'm like, how am I going to get this ground?
Oh. We got to mention that, Kevin, by the way, at the very end.
Go for it.
No. After Jeremy talks.
Oh, maybe I don't want to talk about what I've been buying. No, honestly, I haven't really been buying anything for the past week. I went crazy. I put several hundred thousand dollars into stocks the previous week. But for the past week, what in the world? Kevin, did you have to become governor? You took us out, man.
He just pulled a Copperfield.
Yeah. Whoa, that was a cool magic trick. But anyways, I haven't been buying anything, to be honest. You know, the past week. So I'm just I'm kind of watching what's going on with the chef. I'm kind of keeping track of everything, and I'm seeing like what happens. So. You know, if you've been buying super heavy, and I know Graham and Andre, I think you guys do a little more disciplined buying, like you put a certain amount in the market. I don't really do that. Like I go crazy all you know, in a very short amount.
Research shows that lump sum investing is the better return on your money, so you're doing it better.
Well, I don't know. I mean, debate, you know, you could debate both ways, right? But, you know, when you invest so much in a couple of weeks, you kind of almost like need a breather. It's almost like running like 6 miles in a row. And it's like, oh, you know, let me take a little breather here. One, you start running out of money. But two, the main thing is like sometimes you're like, okay, let me just chill, especially when things start going up. So,
yeah.
Which a lot of stocks have went up over the past, you know, week or so, especially a lot of the small caps. They've made some pretty decent moves. So.
It's all getting expensive again.
Well, I wouldn't say expensive. It's just, and that's the other thing that's a trick sometimes in the stock market, right? A lot of these stocks have been killed. You know, a lot of them are down 70, 80% from 52-week highs. Now, we could argue maybe they got way overvalued. Argument that could be made. But the problem is some of them move all of a sudden up 10%, 15%, and now all of a sudden it feels like they're expensive. When all along, they might not be expensive. For instance, a company I've been investing in recently is an honest company. And that's a company in which, you know, that stock's been hammered. I bought a bunch of shares when it was 9-something a week or two ago. Now it's jumped up to 10 or so. And all of a sudden I stopped buying it. And then I was thinking about it a few hours ago. And I was like, I need to get buying that stock again. It's $10. You know, if I think it's going to be a $20, $30 stock in a few years from now.
Right.
Buy it. You know what I mean? Like don't sit on your hands. So anyways.
What do you see about Honest?
Well, I got 3 stocks I'm buying, September edition coming out after this episode's over. So you're going to have to watch that video there. But anyways, Honest, I mean, it's just a beaten down dog. It's trading at a price to sales ratio under 3. You know, it's very common price to sales ratios are 4 to 6 in, you know, the categories they compete. And I think they're going to far outgrow any of their competitors in terms of percentage of revenue growth. So a lot of just green space in front of them over the next 5-10 years, in my opinion. And at its current valuation, it feels very undervalued. If you have any sort of long term objective,
Jeremy, I've noticed you put a lot of premium on the price to sales ratio. You do that a lot for stocks, right?
Forward PE more, but if it's an unprofitable company, the price to sales ratio gets more important because you can't, right. you can't throw a PE on it if it doesn't have profits. So,
gotcha.
Okay. And that's the situation with Honest. I think they can probably eke out a small profit next year. Analysts have them taking a small loss next year. I think they'll eke out a small profit, but you know, we'll see. So,
yeah, I mean, analysts have this company, the consensus estimate is that it's going to have growth of roughly around 13 to 15% for the next like 4 or 5 years. That's not huge.
Mm-hmm. Not huge, but consistent and pretty dang solid for the categories they compete in. Right. And I mean, they could outgrow those numbers. So but
it's also a pretty small market cap. So, I mean, I feel like it can move fast. The interesting thing though is, and I want to know what your opinion is on it. Yeah, it's under $1 billion. What do you make of like the 5-year search trends on it? Because you look at like the 5-year search trends and it's, yeah, you know, you're trending down.
Yeah, I have seen that. That's kind of the troubling thing. But at the same time, they're getting into more and more, you know, retailers. Let's put it that way. Like if you go to Target and you look at a lot of their products, they're starting to get big space with diapers, baby wipes, stuff like that. So I think it's less of an e-commerce play. Like the company used to be like all e-commerce. And I think it's becoming more of a retail play where they're in the Target stores, they're in Walmart, you know, and things like that. And maybe they can become like the number 3 diaper brand long-term, maybe behind, you know, obviously Huggies and Pampers.
Wow. Yeah. And what happened at earnings? Because they kind of plummeted then.
Yeah. And I saw that. I was already kind of tracking the stock, and then I saw it just crash. And that's when it went down to $9. And that's when I jumped in because I was like, you know, the earnings. I mean, I thought the stock sold off too hard, to be honest. You know, I think there's still the company went public this year. So whenever you get these new companies to go public, and that's the danger of ever touching an IPO, you know, it's still looking for its long-term investor base. And that's what they're still looking for there. A lot of folks are kind of like, I don't know about this company. Jessica Alba, how much is she involved still? You know, and things like that. So.
And Jeremy, Target's your biggest position, right?
Target?
Not yet. Or was it Walgreens? Sorry. Walgreens.
Well, Walgreens is certainly up there. I think the chef just eclipsed Walgreens. I think I have more money. Actually, I'm almost certain I have more money in Tattoo Chef now. Jeez. And Walgreens would be number 2.
Wow.
So
cool.
Yeah. And then I want to keep buying Corsair too. But anyways, I want to ask you a question, Kevin, real quick here. Alibaba, Chinese stocks. Any interest there, or are you little worried?
Yeah, I'm still – I get nervous. You have so much unknown out of China. I mean, I could have never predicted that the day after Didi IPOs here, China would basically, you know, slap them in the face to the tune of 30% of their market value, you know. So that's made me very nervous. I think I have enough exposure to Chinese stocks with NIO. But, yeah, I mean, I've been watching Baba too. I don't know. It's just convincing, like getting convinced to actually make the move and buy something sometimes is the hardest part, you know?
Yeah. 100%. No, I hear you there.
And I heard, did you guys hear about this company Figs?
Yeah. A lot of people have been telling me about that one for a while. I'm trying to figure out if it's a more of a fad. I mean, I know a lot of people that wear it have a lot of positive things to say, but I'm trying to figure out if that could be, you know, commoditized and then, you know, just kind of like knockoff sold, and then, you know, a lot of doctors, nurses, and whatnot start just buying the knockoffs. So that's what I'm trying to figure out with that one.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, the one thing I like about them is they've, and I don't have any money in them, but the growth that they're estimated to have is like 50% year over year. Like the growth is insane. But it's also trading more expensively than Tattooed Chef. And when something's trading more expensively than the chef, and the chef is a ripoff.
Kevin?
Oh, did I lose you there? Sorry. I said the chef is a ripoff.
Kevin, do you want me to vote for you for governor or not?
You can't.
Oh, dang it. That's right. Stupid state lines.
You'll have to move to California first, and then you can decide to vote.
Yeah. I'm going to move right next to you, Kevin, and just cook Tattoo Chef all day, open my windows, and just
fan it over
to your house.
How much are you putting into Honest as a percentage of Tattooed Chef? Because we know that's your biggest position ish, I think you just said it.
Less than 10% or maybe 10%. Okay. Yeah.
It's a newer position. You're kind of building out. Yeah, because look, I mean, the reviews for Honest are phenomenal on Amazon. They look great. So maybe you're onto something, that it's a great company that's just oversold.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a long-term hold. They the millennials, they're in, you know, with a lot of millennial moms getting more popular there. And I think they're going to be onto the next generation. I think Procter & Gamble and some of those other companies, I don't know if they know how to speak to the next generation. The way a new age company like Honest does. So we'll see.
All right. Graham, Andre, any last words?
Yeah, you know what? We got to mention your bankroll coffee, Kevin. So for anybody who's unaware, we created a coffee for Kevin. Well, actually, Kevin, this is your idea. Coming up with 1337, which stands for Leet Coffee. It's now for sale at bankrollcoffee.com. All the proceeds go to Kevin's campaign. So Kevin gets all the money for this. So if you want to support Kevin and you happen to get some coffee too, bankrollcoffee.com. All you got to do is go to 1337. It's Elite Coffee. Proceeds go to Kevin. And then once it's sold, it's sold. So it's just a limited edition sort of thing.
Thanks, man.
Plus you tried it, Kevin. What did you think?
It's great. I love it. It's strong. It's an espresso blend. So you have to know that. But that's perfect for me. Strong and rich.
It is. It's, you all hyped in the mornings for those live streams, Kevin. I've been enjoying this.
Bingo. Works fast.
So
just like me.
Anything else, guys?
No, we're good. I'm good.
Cool. All right, guys. So with that said, make sure to subscribe, hit the like button, but most importantly, subscribe. Just do it, because half the people watching this, they're not subscribed. It's not okay. Just, it's totally free to do. Helps us out tremendously. It takes you a split second to subscribe. Hit the like button. All of our information is down below in the description. Thank you guys so much for watching, and until next time.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.